Welcome to Across the Mic with Julie Otaku. I'm your host, Julie Otaku. This is a podcast about blackness and its many intersections ranging from politics to fashion, music to activism, academia to art, sex work to healthcare, and so on and so forth. Guest appearances from professionals in their respective fields will provide insight and unique perspectives to the issues discussed. Sit back, listen, laugh, think, and consider new perspectives as you join me across the mic. Joining me today is Perla Bernardes, owner of The Narrative.online and PBANL. She's a data analyst with a bachelor's of science and biology. She's Harlem raised by way of Honduras and is an avid comic book collector. Thank you so much for joining me today, Perla.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It is my pleasure. What inspired you to create The Narrative?
Honestly, it was a mixture of a lot of things. Firstly, I just saw so many Black people around me flourishing and doing amazing things, starting businesses, starting new creative endeavors, and in every field, in entrepreneurship, STEM, the arts. And I felt like there needed to be a spotlight put on that, mostly because a lot of us are entering fields that historically we haven't been a part of. And one thing that I found helpful when I was entering the medical field, the science field, was knowing that there was someone like me that had done it before. So it was important for me to showcase that. There was also, I won't say there was a lack of storytelling from our community, because that would be an insult to the Kimberly Crenshaws, the Ta-Nehisi Coates, yourself, Michelle Jacobs, Ashley Preston, but there wasn't enough for my liking. So I created a space for more storytelling to occur and for us to create and shape our new narratives. On top of that, it was also the recent protests. I felt like when you tuned into the protests, and they were happening globally. We saw it in China, here in America, Nigeria, and I'm specifically speaking on protests that followed the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. I felt like the protesters themselves were not given a voice. When you tuned into the news, you saw the news anchors, they were just narrating to you what they were watching from the sidelines. And that made it so easy to push the narrative of looting, of angry protesting. And when you know the rage that those protesters are feeling, what they're really protesting for, that what they're really asking to be acknowledged, the change that they're trying to drive forward, that's when you really get the full story. So I also wanted to create space for such conversations and for all of that to be in one place.
That's excellent. That's very necessary and important work. So I thank you very much for providing the space for us. Do you see yourself more as a conduit, or you yourself contribute in writing your own stories and narratives?
Well, I thought I would be more of a conduit. I really am a behind the scenes type of girl. I prefer to set up the stage, make sure your audience is engaged, and then give someone else the work. But recently, in publishing one of my entries, I realized I also have something to say, and I also have a unique voice as everyone else does, and why not exercise it? So I recently started writing my first article on the erasure of Black women in data. So Samantha Richards published a piece on the erasure of Black women in the Black Lives Matter movement, and I wanted to release it along with some statistics of Black women in regards to police brutality and violence, and I could not find much data. And the data that I did find on Black women, most of them were grouped with other women of color. And it's apples and oranges to try to mix Black women in with women of color. It's a very different experience. Do they both have their hurdles in this society? Yes, but very different and different levels of complexity, I feel. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm actually writing about now. I didn't think I would be writing. I thought I would just be reviewing, editing. You know, Toni Morrison, before she started writing, that's where I wanted to be.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I have something to say, and leading by example, I guess.
That's excellent. So you touch, without saying it, you touch
touched on the concept of intersectionality. So for those who aren't familiar with it, could you speak to why the experience of Black women is different from that of women of color?
Because we're at the intersection of being Black, of being women, and of those that may identify as or not identify as anything or LGBTQ. We are part of every circle, and with every circle comes a different sets of stressors and of hurdles and of realizations of where you are viewed to be in society. So when you get that from different angles, that's where your intersectionality is. So it's very important to acknowledge, you know, yes, we're Black women, but, you know, we don't have the benefits of the patriarchy.
That is true.
Your face. So our journey is, it's a very different walk of life, and we have different combinations of experiences because of that. So it plays into how we view ourselves, because now we have to see who we want to identify as when all those factors are playing and are influences. Because I'm just as much Black as I am woman. I'm just as much a bisexual woman as I am human. They're all part of me. So I have to, I learn to navigate all those different pieces. And sometimes those two don't mesh well. You know, you can come across very homophobic energy within the Black community. So now you have to navigate those two while still remaining true to yourself. And that's daily. That's where every day you're reminded that you fall within one of those categories. And those are only to name a few. You know, there are categories within categories. So I'm sticking to the main ones I navigate. And, you know, I'm also Latina, and trying to bring those all into one, because they all create me. That's a unique experience for everyone that experiences intersectionality. Only you know what you're really balancing.
I'm just receiving everything you just said, because this isn't a concept that is oftentimes spoken of, usually because the authors of this concept are Black women, and it's already the established evil of erasing Black women in academia as well as in the protest movements and basically every other facet of daily life as we know it. And one of the culprits of that is a unique Black experience, unique to Black women experience, and that is misogynoir. This year, I believe we've had to come face to face with it, and it's reared its ugly head in the most peculiar, the most violent, and the most almost random of ways, whether it is Black men on one hand sexualizing and praising Meg Thee Stallion for being attractive and a voluptuous Black woman and all this, but then on the same token saying she's built like a linebacker and too damn big, and they understand why Tory would have shot her, or dehumanizing Breonna Taylor and only humanizing her when they realized, oh, she was an EMT. She was somebody who was of service. So she was able to provide for others, and then only finding intrinsic value in Black women when they're producing. So say all this to say, the concept of misogynoir, have you written any pieces or been tackling it more so this year than in prior times?
Not really. It's the same way, the best way I can explain it is the same way that racial tensions are surfacing now. In the days, but it was always there for us. It may be more in their face for those who were able to sweep it under the rug or not even experience it, but we always felt it. Now it's just at the surface level. So it's the same thing with the misogynoir. It was always there. Now women are not taking that shit, and they shouldn't. So it's been very beautiful to just watch Black women specifically free themselves of those inhibitions created by misogynoir, of not trying to fit into a certain cast, of not trying to walk within certain lines and boundaries and limits of themselves. I'm seeing Black women really step into their essence, exploring, allowing themselves to not be defined by their choices, but to show, I made this with my chest. I decided on this with my chest.
And in owning that space, there is power in that. How does it feel this year, really, to step into your power and to assert yourself in these spaces, whether it be in a back and forth you get into online, like on Twitter or something, you see a stupid tweet written by a guy and you're like, I don't agree with you and I got time today. So we're about to go back and forth. And in the narrative, creating space and then fully establishing the boundaries of this is a space for Black women or Black non-gender, nondescript people. How has that process been for you internally?
Well, first of all, I do want to highlight that taking up space can look differently. In the example you use, it could be, yes, let's go back and forth today, or it could also be, I'm not letting you disturb my peace because it's not my job to meet you or do the back and forth. So, and I wouldn't want to limit it to just this year because it's something I've watched happen. Gradually, but now it's become more mainstream to hear a woman say, I'm only moving in regards to how I want to move. There are no external factors influencing me, or acknowledging, okay, this was influencing me. Obviously, this is not how I want to move. So I'm making some changes and I'm doing things as I deem fit. But overall, it's been a lot of realization moments because sometimes you're so deep in it that you don't even realize, wow, I've been playing into it in some way, shape, or form. I feel like most of the time, women are raised to be of service in a way, either it be emotional support, mental, emotional labor. We've been raised to take things on. So it's been so liberating to watch women release those responsibilities that were placed on us that we didn't necessarily choose or take up, and making ourselves a priority. We're now the most educated group. We're opening businesses at higher rates
than any other demographic.
And it's just, I just want to see more of it. And I've created the narrative to highlight those faces because I'm friends with these women. So of course,
you are that woman.
Thank you. So of course, I want the world to see what I see. And that was, again, I wanted to showcase the beauty of Blackness and what Blackness contributes and can look like and can create and can be at every stage in all aspects. So, but how about your perspective? As a Black man, where do you stand in watching women say, you know, I'm not doing this, I'm not taking this on anymore, I'm not carrying, you know when Erica Badu wrote Bag Lady?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's basically Black women putting down bags that do not belong to them.
That's the perfect analogy.
Bag Lady, you're gonna break. I forgot the lyrics, but it's basically you can't carry all these bags around.
That's so
and
true.
I feel like these were never bags that we chose to pick up. They were handed to us.
Yeah, and thrown onto you.
And that was like, listen, figure it out. I have my bags to take care of, literally and figuratively.
Well, as a Black man watching all of this happen and all of it unfold in front of me, I absolutely love and support it because I am the son of a woman who for a long time, she's taken on many, many responsibilities. She's a mother of four, and I've seen her go... We moved from Cameroon in 2009. I saw her have to raise us. Of course, my father was there. Let me not say of course, but my father was there. And they both raised us, but I saw my mother from when we moved over here, just toiling and working two jobs at a time. She had cancer at one point, cervical cancer at one point, and she was going through chemo and everything, but she was still making it happen. She was still going to work. She would leave early enough to go and get her therapy, and then she'd be at work. All this done before I'm even on the school bus. And I never got to appreciate or even like truly acknowledge the bandwidth and strength needed to be able to do those things until later on in life. And she has just, through Herculean efforts, just been exceptional my whole life. And recently, she started to take care of herself more and to just assert herself as, hey, I'm buying this because I deserve it. I'm not going to do this because I don't want to. And just, you know, really prioritizing herself instead of caring about what this, that, and the latter has to say. If her family's taken care of, that is the most important thing to her. She doesn't engage in things that are at the detriment to her. And I love her so much for it because I've seen her literally almost work herself to death because she needed to take care of us. But she went above and beyond where most would have tapped out. So seeing her prioritize herself has been absolutely lovely. Seeing my Black female friends and every Black female, either partner, friend, or acquaintance I've seen just doing the damn thing, just It's awesome because Black women do not need to tell you they're doing something for them to do it. Black men are very boisterous. We like to talk about what we're doing. We're the ones always talking about, man, I'm moving in silence. Y'all don't even know what I'm up to. The whole time, you're not quiet because you're letting people know you're doing something. Black women will do what they need to do and you'll just see the end result. You don't even know when she started.
Pop up with it.
But she'll just show up and all of a sudden she got it. And you just got to deal with that because she decided to prioritize herself and whatever she was up to and took care of business. A lot of what Black women do compared to everybody else is they're about action. Very little of what Black women do is ever performative. Very little. And I think that is the biggest distinguishing factors between Black women and everybody else. They're about it.
And the evidence in that is that even up to this point, Black women don't receive the credit that they're deserved. They don't receive their flowers and continue doing the work. That alone just proves everything you said. Because to still be doing the work up to this point, that's a different type of love. That's a different type of commitment. So,
truly, because all of this is done while they're like taking care of other people and still quote unquote serving others and like sometimes tending house and home and then playing therapist to Black men who refuse to get a therapist and so many other things, and then dealing with white supremacy as a whole. And it's like,
Before I got on the podcast with you, I was watching a Huey P. Newton documentary, and throughout the entire documentary, I could only think of, you know, the Black Panther Party. They put the Black women off of the
face of it.
Yeah, out of the frame. They're in the background. And that's just one example. The same way as in the civil rights movement, a lot of the organizing, tending, a lot of preparation for events, a lot of speech writing was by Black women, a lot of edits. So as you were saying, that is just crazy that currently the Black Lives Matter movement, you're seeing again, it's Black women who started the Black Lives Matter movement. It's a Black 20-year-old trending for calling out a whole police department.
She is exceptional. I need to get her name so we can say it on this on this episode specifically. But continue, please.
I got you right now. And it's
the three founders of the Black Lives Matter movement: Alicia Garza, Opal Tometi, and Patrice Cullors. Those three names everybody should know better than they know the name Sean King, Charlemagne the God, or any other Black male spokesperson or personality. These three women have effectively changed the world. But if you were to ask any random person on the street who founded the Black Lives Matter movement, they wouldn't even know where to begin.
And then it was Kasia Brooks. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Who, you know, read the commission to fill by name.
What state was that in?
I believe that was Kansas City.
It was Kansas City PD, KCPD. And you see that kind of bravery in Black women who are just unapologetic at the forefront, making no apologies, throwing away their respectability politics and all, just being exceptional and very selfless and bold in asserting their, not only their Blackness, but their power in general. But then you have Black men who I'm not here to bash guys. I'm not here to just cape for women as if men do nothing. But the purpose of this entire season is to highlight what Black women do. And if it means to then either malign or to highlight the pitfalls of Black men, so be it. Because a lot of Black men's successes have been at the downfall of Black women or at the... Exactly, on the backs of Black women. So, as I was saying, a lot of us Black men will stand on the sidelines and talk down to or criticize and point fingers at these Black women who are going above and beyond when we don't even have the gall or half the nerve to do what they do. Black men play the biggest game of respectability politics on the face of the planet. Black men, the patriarchy isn't going to save you from white supremacy. It's not. And acknowledge that the patriarchy puts you in a place of privilege over Black women to begin with. So do not think your experience as a Black man is any worse or even equal to that of Black women. Understand intersectionality and understand it damn well, through and through, front to back. Your privilege as a man puts you at a huge advantage over Black women before anything. So when a Black woman speaks, you shut up and you listen. If a Black woman speaks, don't say, oh my gosh, she's so great. Give her your microphone. Don't shout her name. Don't promote her. Give her your microphone and just provide her a space where her message can be amplified.
And that in itself is a form of protection.
Exactly.
Because in that, you are respecting her input, her voice, and her position.
And then be willing, ready, and able to put yourself physically in harm's way to protect Black women. Don't just quote Malcolm X and then call it a day because, oh my God. I'm so glad I got that off my chest. I reposted that quote. They understand where I am now amongst Black women. They know I'm riding for them and protecting them. And then at protests, you're nowhere to be found. On Twitter, you're talking down and insulting Black women. Yo, your activism has to be thorough, top to bottom.
Because the amount of times that you like put the protect Black women hashtag social media trend, the amount of time as a Black woman that I have seen someone who has turned a blind eye when they've seen a Black woman in need, it just drives home the point that social media is a facade.
It's super performative.
Let me see what you're really about in person, actions.
Exactly. Don't tell me you respect Black women and all this other stuff on social media, but you are not taking care of your child. You don't speak to the mother of your child. You disrespect her. You speak down on the partners you do have. You support misogynistic musicians, politicians, and all this other stuff. Like, you got to be all the way thorough with it. And I'm not going to sit here and act like I am the poster boy for what Black man should be. Hell, I'm still developing as a Black man myself. I know I'm at fault. I'm in the constant stage of unlearning a lot of things, and I'm no better than the next person, but my capacity and desire to learn definitely gives me an edge over the next guy who's not doing anything actively to change their situation. Don't chalk it up to what's around you. Don't chalk it up to how you were raised. Those excuses are no longer valid as a grown man. They are not.
Nor is gaslighting, you know, And again, that's our inner respect, because having to prove that what we're telling you is true, why are you not giving us the benefit of the doubt that you give anyone else you talk to? You don't press them as much for evidence, for facts, for personal experiences.
I'm going to find now the video of James Baldwin having a conversation with
Giovanni.
Nikki Giovanni. If I love you, I can't lie to you. And then she says, lie to me. No, please lie to me. You go out there, you lie to the white man, you smile for him, you do all these things, you treat them so nice, but then you come home, you treat me mean, you disrespect me. Why can't you just lie to me the same way you lie to him?
How I get the, because I love you most, I get the least of you.
Exactly.
Listen, when these smoke gave flowers to them at the entrance of Rapture,
and then picked actors that looked like Nikki Giovanni and James Baldwin. I love that.
I need to get those actors' names, because when the James Baldwin character, he had the hand and the sands so perfect.
His eyes were even similar.
He was the face. It was the lips for me.
Truly. But
I love, listen, I'm D Smoke, Sir. They're brothers, I believe. I think I pronounced Sir's name correct.
Yeah.
They are definitely brothers. And the content, the messages that they send out in their music, so powerful. Rapture will be the same. We will make that an intro one day for Black women, because Rapture is all about imagining the world without Black women.
That's a nightmare to me. That's hell. Is hell.
So beautifully, you know, the essence of the song was how we're viewed by the things we can provide, the comfort, the love, the softness, but the work in itself either goes unnoticed or is undervalued.
Yep.
It's always, what can we provide? So it was a beautiful, I'm a decent fan, in case that wasn't.
Absolutely. Hell, I might just plug his song on this episode.
But so when I saw because I very much enjoy watching old interviews, Nikki Giovanni, Toni Morrison, Tupac. I can always watch Tupac. I can always listen to Tupac called the government thugs and mobsters, because he's not wrong. But it just shows how some it's fascinating how some conversations and topics are still so relevant, because how Nikki Giovanni was feeling in that moment is how a lot of women present day feel
and continue to feel, because we are hard-headed and we don't learn from history. We don't study our history enough, and we sure as hell don't take away any lessons besides what we see as convenient or worthy of whatever movement we are currently involved in. I truly believe Black men do not want to fully dissect and just investigate where our relationship with Black women was broken, because it would then show how complicit we are in the system of white supremacy while also being victims of it. And just that paradox in and of itself is enough to send your head spinning. But it is nothing compared to what Black women have to live through, because Black women are used for labor, are used for sexual acts, are used for spiritual rituals. And so just so many forms of, just so many ways that Black women have things taken from them and just continuously being asked for things and demanded and things stolen with very little, if anything, in return. The Three-Fifths Compromise looked at Black men first, not Black people, Black men.
Oh yeah, Black men, the way... it was one class that explained it. The way in which rights will always be rolled out is white men, white women, Black men.
Exactly. Black. And that's where it stopped.
We'll do whiteness first, mm-hmm. Blackie next, mm-hmm. and then the remaining.
Exactly.
Wow. It's just crazy you brought up the Three-Fifths Compromise, because that's the first thing I think about when someone says that the Republicans gave slaves the right to vote. And it's like, they gave fifths of you. They gave a fraction of you. Not a fool. They gave someone who they did not see and wrote was not a full human being.
Exactly. Right. So people are just so satisfied in taking crumbs and then running with it. I partially understand it, because Black people don't know what freedom truly looks like. You could go to the quote unquote freest and strongest republic or democracy in Africa. That is not what true Black freedom looks like. It isn't. You could even go to an indigenous African group that has had little colonial contact. That is not what true Black freedom looks like. Like, it's still a concept we are vying for and trying to discover each and every day. So when we take crumbs and everything, I understand, but we should demand more because we deserve more.
What does Black freedom look like to you?
Well... that's heavy, because then you have to ask yourself, how do you isolate Blackness from whiteness? Because Blackness doesn't exist outside of what whiteness defined it as. Because even Blackness is a social construct. That's something that was created, and then that label was affixed to us. Africa wasn't even named Africa by Africans. Like, that's not a name we came up for ourselves. We didn't establish these borders that exist today.
Nope.
So many things of what we have as Black people across the diaspora weren't determined by us. It's very recent that we started to create things for ourselves. And oftentimes when we create these things, it is to combat white supremacy or to subvert it in one way or another. So just as whiteness doesn't exist outside of anti-Blackness, Blackness has to subvert whiteness in order to exist in some form of, in some way free of it. And it's such a sick thing. It hurts my head to think about it, not because it's like frustrating, but it is really, it's a difficult concept to wrap your head around. We could honestly make this episode 3 hours long and we still wouldn't scratch the surface.
What I think about when you say that, I feel like the closest as a people we came to freedom here in America was when we were still segregated.
Because at least we had autonomy within ourselves, physically removed from whiteness.
On our own institutions. We were taught by ourselves. We did our finances with ourselves. We shopped from ourselves. We worked within.
Medicated ourselves.
That, and not to get too controversial across the mic, but I'd be down for resegregation. I definitely would. Because like you said, when we segregated, when we came together, and I remember so many points made. I think James Baldwin was who said this. He was explaining that there was no real infrastructure structure created for segregation to occur. We were, and that's one of the reasons why systemic racism is blatant at every turn, that it was not created with us in mind, because it was when segregation occurred, there were no amendments made in regards to property, financial. It was structural. Changes were made structural, and even in regards to education, like now we were able to share schools. Those type of changes were made, but the infrastructure, the system itself, was never amended to take Black history and a Black person, even just a single Black person, and their experiences at that time were not taken into consideration ever. Like, there was never any change really made to show governmentally, institutionally, that segregation occurred.
That's so true, because when segregation occurred, as you said, whiteness continued as it was. It continued as it was. And once integration begun, Black people had to be integrated, and accommodations, put that in huge quotations, by the way, accommodations had to be made for Black people to sort of coexist. I say sort of because if this is coexistence, we need to try something else.
I was using the reverse word in that whole exchange just now. Yes, integration.
Yeah, integration.
But yes, when integration occurred, there were no governmental changes made to the infrastructure of America to show that. It was just, okay, now you guys can come do what we do. You can join us. You can leave what you built. You want it so badly here, but we're not going to. It shows that it was never intentional, and that basically white America felt like we were just pulling up. Yes, when America became integrated, when they started integrating, there was no infrastructural change, governmentally specifically, to how they were operating to include Black Americans and to take their background and history into consideration. So what we're seeing now, all these red states that we're seeing now, we forget that this happened very recently. We forget that these are people that, well, I sometimes forget because I still get surprised by racism sometimes.
True.
But these are people that still feel like we are intruding on them. And present and current events, it's a reflection of that. It's very much a reflection of that. The entitlement of Orange Man supporters is a beautiful reflection of how they feel this is theirs, as if it wasn't built by Black Americans. And I don't even like the phrase Black Americans. Black people. So, yeah, it's cause and effect. This government was never created nor amended to take the Black life into consideration.
And its fullness.
Just 3/5 of it.
Yeah. And now with the election, we're seeing what happens when Black people mobilize.
Listen.
And when white supremacy is just given a hard no.
They are flipping Georgia. They are flipping PA. It's only North Carolina right now.
Actually, they flipped it. All four were flipped. It's kind of close, but all four are flipped. And that's this point right here is perfectly going to date this episode, because people are going to be like, oh, that was during the week of the, you know, the 2020 presidential election.
We're on day three.
Day four. This feels like a Nigerian wedding. It's ridiculous. It's still going.
And Nevada is taking their time.
The way the numbers are set up, they could just declare it now, but because there's all these calls for there's corruption and da-da-da-da-da, we have to get more votes in, because they're like, well, it could tip the scales for... Nah, dog. The math ain't even mathing for you. Stop.
Math ain't mathing.
It's really not. And on that, we could talk about STEM real quick, because you do work in data analysis. So tell me a little more about that, because Black girls in STEM are phenomenal.
My interest in data analytics started with finance, actually.
Oh, you say data.
I do say data.
It's data. It's data, not data.
It's both of them. But yeah, my interest started with financial literacy. And then because my background is really in clinical research, but I started using Excel and I taught myself how to code. And now I do data analytics. And currently I'm working on on starting my own thesis, I guess would be the correct phrase. And I'm just working with zip codes and by location showing the disproportionate distribution in one, healthcare resources, two, funding, and three, educational materials. So I really want to show that, well, we already know there's a correlation between location and the quality of lifestyle that you can lead. So now I just want to show the science behind it. And I really want to see, because it also opens up the floods to what policies is it that influences and that are allowing these things to take place. Because eventually I do want to go into policy change, you know, down the road. I believe in midlife career changes.
Of course.
I do believe change is possible in America, but it really does start with learning what you want to undo. And that was actually one of the goals my most narrative. I feel like to create the life that you want to create here, you need to first be knowledgeable of how they're maintaining the current systems. And knowledge is power. So, yeah.
Absolutely. That's incredible work, because you see, one of the characteristics of white supremacy and its agents and proponents is selective, It is selective illiteracy. They just decide when and where to acknowledge certain numbers.
Exactly.
And they also lack, basic human empathy. So if you give them an anecdote on how you live in a certain area and the quality of your schools is nowhere near as high as the neighboring high school or elementary school or school district, they won't believe you. They only believe in hard numbers and analytics.
And
so,
if you enroll your child in a better school district, you can go to jail, if you're black.
Oh, of course. Like, why you think you as a Negro can enroll your child in a school that grants them a better opportunity at life and get away with it? You think you can even exercise any form of proximity to whiteness if it includes your educational prowess and potential? No. No, white supremacy says no to that. And it also says no because the data you provided was provided by a black woman. And it will continue to trivialize your experience, even with accolades and the proper paperwork to certify it from institutions they created using systems and tools they provided. It is just so exhausting.
Right.
So exhausting. Because the mental gymnastics one has to do to validate racism and just oppression in general, it's just insufferable at this point. It's insufferable. The election even being this close shows that logic is non-existent in white supremacy. It is non-existent.
At all.
It is just self-serving, only concerned with self-preservation and the continuation of the system as it is. Because there's no way that some of the numbers that have gone up should have gone up the way they did. Black women, as always, showed out, went up in numbers in terms of their Democratic votes. Now, we can have a conversation about how whether it's Democratic or Republican, they're both parts of a two-party system that have never really truly benefited the black community, blah, blah, blah. We can have that conversation some other time. But for right now, black women showed up and did what they had to do. What did black men do? Up their support for Trump compared to the 2016 election. And what else have they done? Let's talk about specific individuals. Lil Wayne came through. I support Donald Trump. He also came through. I could never disrespect a cop. A cop saved my life. What else happened? Lil Pump, not even going to give him the time of day, just going to say his name. Shall I say Lil Pimp? And I don't want to completely malign Ice Cube for what he did, because good for you, you're reaching across both aisles trying to get something done for the black community. But why haven't you done this over the course of the last 3.5 years of this presidency? You're doing it 2 weeks before probably the most important election in God knows how long. Why now? I don't care if it's a platinum or a diamond plan. Why are you only seeking it out this close to the election? And you know you're going to be treated as a mouthpiece for the entire black majority when you do it.
Because I don't doubt that he presented this plan much earlier on, but this timing that worked best for the Trump administration.
Exactly. It was
so
too convenient.
You are what? You're being paraded.
Mm-hmm. you're Mr. NWA, and now you're next to a hate-mongering white supremacist on the global stage. You, 20-year-old you, would smack you, modern you, in the mouth for what you're doing, sir, Mr. Cube. All due respect, but
NWA, you wouldn't stop the truth right now.
Yeah, Eazy-E would not approve. He would not approve. God rest his soul. But it's just... It's very often black men, and especially the super cap, the hyper capitalist black men who make tons of money and are only concerned with preserving said money, because money as a black man buys you proximity to whiteness, because wealth equals, you know, a lot of doors opening for you. And now you're entering rooms with more and more white people, but you're not questioning why you're only entering rooms with white people and why you're the only black person in said room. You're just happy to be there. And here you are, never bucking the trend, never making enough noise to bring others up with you, just creating more space for yourself and making the space more comfortable for you. Make it make sense. Make it make sense. You're complaining about taxes when your family members are still in the same neighborhood you rapped about and made money off rapping about.
This is when they usually become black Republicans.
Oh, that's one of the major bases that black Republicans even ride on. And they'll also cite Christian values for their views and alignment with the Republican Party. It makes no sense to me.
The fact, because I'm still looking at the numbers, and the fact that 70 million people voted still for this individual, because this is the point at which you are saying, up to this point, all of the pedophilia, the racism,
the corruption,
the misbehavior, the corruption, none of those were deal breakers.
Nope.
Letting a pandemic run rampant when he had the tools to keep it at bay, to address it, when he knew months before it became a pandemic, up to none of those were deal breakers for you.
No, they weren't. On behalf of, or to speak with, to speak as if I was a member of this demographic, God forbid, I would never wish that upon my worst enemy. No, those aren't deal breakers, because he advances the hatred that has kept me comfortable and on top socioeconomically and racially for decades and centuries, actually. So no, I will not do anything that would disrupt this hierarchy.
This hierarchy that I can now enjoy more boldly under this administration. Like, I came across a tweet of, oh, now we can go back to regular racism. And it should not have made me laugh. But the accuracy.
So accurate. It's hilarious, actually. It's hilarious, actually, but in the most sad way, because
we all know what we mean.
We wish it was better, but we know it's never really been better. It's just changed form. It's really just changed form. And with platforms like The Narrative, those aren't the stories we're focusing on. Those aren't the stories being highlighted. The voice of the oppressed is taking over. That is the one taking center stage. That is the one being amplified and the one being served to you, whether you like it or not. It is for consumption by all people, but the participation is selective.
It was just very important to have people tell their own stories or speak on behalf of someone else. That relatedness, that they feel seen when they come and they understand this space was created for you. I just really wanted to hold space.
And you do so with dignity, elegance, and power. So I want to say I appreciate all that you have done, all that you do, and all you will continue to do. And I'll continue to promote, educate, and just shout it from the mountaintops, do whatever I need to do to make sure platforms like yours continue to be interacted with and elevated, because God knows we need it. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of having to learn a curriculum that does not have me in it. I'm sick and tired of learning narratives and knowing more about another people's history than I do my own. Hey, there should be no reason why I know all the different French kings, but I don't know the founding of my own nation. I'm Cameroonian. I barely remember the original history. I just know it's slathered with colonization, and it went between like the hands of three different European nations before it eventually became Cameroon. We didn't even name ourselves Cameroonians. It was just bestowed upon us.
And that was, honestly, documenting was also an important part in creating the narrative. I felt like every day I was learning of someone new or a new event, and I was always questioning myself, why am I just learning this in my 20s? Like, I have not been in school for 10 plus years. years. Why is this the first I'm hearing of this? So it was very important when you go to the site, you see Asante Shakur, you see Marsha P. Johnson, you see Elaine Brown, Nikki Giovanni, Kimberly Crenshaw. You see people that have studied you, people that their life's work is about you, who when they speak, you can relate. Yeah, I feel like Black people have been magical. And by that, I don't mean fairies and rainbows, but so unique. No one has done the things we have done. When we call ourselves the blueprint, it's not up for debate.
Yeah, it's not just a flex, it's fact.
So me being able to document and to put together all this evidence, all these resources that showcase that magic, it was very important. It was very important because like you said, we are not part of the curriculum. So I wanted to make sure that everyone reaches the stage in which it's like, wait, I'm learning about everyone else but myself. And when I do learn about myself, it's like they're dusting off the books and putting and just showing me the front cover and that's it.
Yep.
So I wanted to create I wanted the narrative to provide resources for people that wanted to open that book, that wanted to find someone else to discuss it with, that wanted to find someone who had XYZ experience and who detailed it from a perspective they would understand. Without question, raw, true.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. That was very well played. And what are some of the resources you provide on your site?
Well, currently I have the Slavery Rebranded, Mass Incarceration in America Literary Collection. It's a collection of free PDFs and it discusses mass incarceration in America. I have books by Beth E. Ritchie, Angela Davis, Elizabeth Hinton, Michelle Alexander. So The New Jim Crow is up there. Our prison's obsolete. And the goal is to start conversation on topics that need to be discussed, especially amongst us, because one, we're one of the highest incarcerated populations. We see that we are targets to police departments everywhere. We are targets to military violence internationally just because of how we look. I wanted a place where the discussion could be had. You find someone who's also reading the book, see what's up, and introduce new ideas. Personally, right now I'm reading Our Prison's Obsolete.
That's a relatively quick read, right?
Yeah, it's a really quick read.
Awesome.
Right now, I'm reading it with one of my friends, and it's a topic I'm new to, but I know for sure I don't believe in prisons. So I wanted somewhere that provided resources for research. So I hope to keep growing it.
Mm-hmm. In what other ways do you see the platform growing? Would you do a video aspect? Would you perhaps do a podcast?
I would do a podcast. I actually sat down and had a conversation with Samantha Richards, who wrote Say Her Name, or whatever Destiny's Child said on for Black women. So I'm going to edit that, putting on my Across the Mic hats to edit and upload. and honestly, the ultimate goal is to have a collection of a multitude of Black voices telling their experience, detailing either how they started their business, how they got their business back, how they launched a product, what they learned in travel, anything. Because I feel that Blackness has so much to offer and I wanted to put it in a place in which it's for us. So, you know, the vulture, the culture vultures can get to it.
Mm-hmm. Like Solange's song, For Us, By Us, FUBU.
Exactly. And that's the goal, you know? I love to read. So I very much look forward to submission, which you can get to me through content submission at the narrative.
Look at you getting ahead of me. I was going to give you the space to plug, but you go right ahead. Let the people know how they can reach you, how they can interact with you, support you, drop your Cash App, whatever your Western Union line. The people know.
Cash App me is $Elton. That was the narrative website. But you can also hit us up on Instagram, is at the narrative. narrative.raw.true. Twitter, same handle, the narrative, raw, true. And engage with us. We're always down for conversation. We're always looking to support and amplify voices just because it's necessary. And
And first off, thank you very much. Thank you very much. That was very well put. In creating the narrative, you're not explicit in your, I don't want to say your mission. You're not explicit in saying it is a space for only Black voices, but through your content, it speaks for itself. What do you think is the real, like, ultimate goal of having these Black spaces? Do you think it needs to be said explicitly, or it's something that should just show itself?
It was on purpose that I didn't explicitly say Black X, Y, and Z. I feel like they should. It should just be, and it'll speak for itself. Because see, you picked up on it.
Of course,
I didn't have to hammer in there that it's for Black people by Black people, because my content is relatable to Black people. The way we engage on social media is relatable to Black people. I have FUBU on Instagram, so it's the same way. My inspiration was the way that Solange. And the nose mix up. The intro to For Us By Us, all my niggas in the whole wide world. Off bat, you know if it's cool or if it's not. Yep. Because she was just herself. She just started. She just started it. And you automatically knew it's not for you. You can listen to it.
Yeah, you can spectate. You
can't sit down. There's at the table for you. So that was what I wanted the narrative to show, that you can watch and you can observe and appreciate and be an outsider, but remember that you are an outsider. Remember that we are allowing you into this space. You have no autonomy here. If you came, you came to play the sidelines. You're welcome, but it's not about you. So
I love that so much. And remember, to partake in Blackness in any form is a privilege and should be treated as such by those who do partake in it from the outside and those who allow others to partake in it from within. To partake in Blackness is a privilege. It has been commodified in God knows and perverted in God knows how many ways. But remember, it is a privilege for you to dread your hair. It is a privilege for you to rap with us. It is a privilege for us to entertain your silly little attempts at recreating our dance moves and our swagger and our style and just our general mannerisms. Like, y'all can't duplicate this. You never will be able to. You never have. It's just, you can't do it.
You take from me is notes.
Exactly. Oh, say it again. Say it again.
The only thing you can take from me is notes.
The only thing you could take from me is notes.
But also that was a conversation I had to have with myself. How inclusive did I want to be? And that played into my intention. So if I'm going to move intentionally and I'm going to put out content and resources specific to my community, I can never forget who I'm catering to.
Absolutely.
That answered my question right there. Because I have to have faith that those I'm catering for will feel at home when I put anything out. It can't be.
It has to be definite. And I will tell you that I most certainly felt at home when I interacted with the narrative. That's why I followed the page. That's why I reached out to you and had to have you on the podcast. So I'm about to quote a white man, but I believe this quote is very powerful and it applies to what is being discussed. The quote is, this is by Oscar Wilde. The quote is, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery that mediocrity can pay to greatness. And I believe that is the truest quote in regards to Blackness and its relation to all things else.
Yes.
Perla, thank you so much for being on this episode. You were an absolute joy to talk to and to laugh with and to lament the existential crises and wonders of being a Black person in this world. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for creating this platform. I feel like home when I come on here. Also, when I listen to you with other people, obviously.
That makes my heart so full. Y'all don't see it, but I'm trying really hard not to smile.
He's geeking, y'all.
I'm geeky right now. But again, thank you so much for coming on here. I do appreciate it. And it's one of many future collaborations for sure.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
No problem at all.
Thank you for tuning in today. Your listenership and support are greatly appreciated. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to use the voice message feature on the Anchor app or message me on social media. You could be listening to anything in the world right now, but you're here listening to me, and I appreciate you. Until next time, this has been Across the Mic with Julio Taku. Godspeed.